Hello, and welcome to the Done a Day podcast. My idea is that I will read a Done poem a day, and podcast those poems in a series, and that by the end of the summer, if not sooner, I will have a considerable archive of John Donne's poetry built up in my readings to be able to offer my Done seminar in the fall a resource. They can listen to me read the poem. The reading should be an implicit interpretation, or at least a starting point for their own thinking, and also perhaps clarify some of the difficult syntactical bits that one is likely to find in Renaissance verse, especially the strong-lined kind of Renaissance verse that John Donne's poetry exemplifies. Those are my hopes. Of course, the secret agenda here, which is probably not so secret to you, dear listener, is that I love this stuff and will have a great time just reading it aloud and sharing it with you. It's tremendous poetry. It's some of the best poetry ever written, I believe, in English anyway, which is the only language I'm competent to judge in. John Donne's poetry was a major discovery for me. I was a junior in college when I first read Donne's poetry. It was the fall of my junior year. And I was already a committed English major by then. There was no question that this is what I needed to do. But Donne's poetry was something unusual for me, perhaps because of what T.S. Eliot said about John Donne. I won't get this exactly right without reading it straight to you from the essay on the Metaphysical Poets, but the gist of it is that for Donne, a thought was an experience. It modified his sensibility. Now, for someone who was in love with words, sitting there, 19 years old, in a college classroom, hearing a really cool professor by the name of Michael Roman say that about a poet, quoting Eliot, certainly, but it was the first time I'd heard such a description, was as if someone had said to me, you know, geeks who love poetry are really not very different from, say, Indiana Jones. To have a thought be an experience and change your sensibility was something that seemed not only radical to me, but another name for what I had been experiencing ever since I'd started reading poetry. So it was a challenge, it was a new adventure, it was a perfect fit for some of my deepest longings and for some of my most profound experiences of poetry. It was a great, great moment. And in some respects, I've just never gotten over that. I think it was that early love for Donne that helped take me into the, oh, I would say, more challenging waters, even, of John Milton. And that's saying something, because Donne himself is no slouch and is quite challenging. At any rate, when Dr. Roman would keep saying things like, well, of course, this excellence which we so admire in Donne will find its peak in Milton, or this control of the line that is so splendid and lovely in Herbert will, of course, find its peak in Milton, I thought he was kidding. I thought, come on, Milton, we all know that's just fuddy-duddy stuff. This is the rock and roll of poetry. But it turned out that Milton was the greatest rock and roll poet ever, and John Donne, wonderful as he is, was not quite up to Milton's level. But you can fall pretty short of John Milton and still be one of the Himalayas, I would say, not to change my metaphor, in a very Dunnian and dramatic and radical way. And I think John Donne really has scaled some of the highest peaks and has actually created some of the highest peaks in English literature, certainly for me. I'm going to be reading these poems out of the very book that I used when I was 19 years old back at Wake Forest University in the late 1970s. It was this book that I would read these poems in and come to class all charged up and eager to say something, but also eager to hear what Dr. Roman would have to say. I knew that however deeply I had been affected by the poem as I had done my work for class, there would be something that Dr. Michael Roman would say or do, or maybe just the way he would walk across the class while he was talking, that would bring me into something that was far deeper and far richer than I could have even imagined. That, I think, is one of the things I paid my tuition for. And if that made him the sage on the stage, well, he's a sage on the stage who has ever since that time been a guide at my side. So, Dr. Roman, I owe a lot of this to you, and today's podcast is dedicated to you. It's the first Donne poem from the 1633 edition of his collected poems from the section entitled Songs and Sonnets, from the book you assigned us, Dr. Roman. The Good Morrow by John Donne. I wonder by my troth what thou and I did till we loved. Were we not weaned till then, but sucked on country pleasures, childishly? Or snorted we in the seven sleepers' den? 'Twas so. But this, all pleasures fancies be. If ever any beauty I did see, which I desired and got, 'twas but a dream of thee. And now good morrow to our waking souls, which watch not one another out of fear, for love, all love of other sights controls, and makes one little room and everywhere. Let sea discoverers to new worlds have gone, let maps to other worlds on worlds have shown, let us possess one world. Each hath one, and is one. My face in thine eye, thine in mine appears, and true plain hearts do in the faces rest. Where can we find two better hemispheres, without sharp north, without declining west? Whatever dies was not mixed equally. If our two loves be one, or thou and I love so alike that none do slacken, none can die.